You're listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball,
a podcast by fans
from the iubase.com website.
For anyone wanting more information on the Indiana University baseball program.
All right, welcome. We're recording this on Wednesday, March 10th, 2021. I'm Josh Bennett, joined by stats guru Cassidy Palmer, master of the RPI Carl James, and the man who, quote, tweeted the Golden Gophers when they gloated about breaking up a no-no with a bunt, Chris Feeney. So Big Ten baseball was back this weekend. A feature of the 2021 season schedule is the three-team pod format, and Indiana was placed in the first such pod with Minnesota and Rutgers. Furthermore, Indiana got to face both opponents Friday night starter with the first doubleheader, and they had differing results. Rutgers lefty Harry Rutowski held IU's 2-5 hitters to an 0-for-12 clip in the first game. Hoosier ace Gabe Bierman struggled with command and gave up 2 runs on 3 hits and 5 walks and 4 innings of work. There were bright spots in the loss. John Meduño, in relief, was electric in 4 innings, faced the minimum and struck out 4. The Hoosiers out-hit the Scarlet Knights 5-3. In the nightcap, lefty starter Tommy Summer was dealing. He did not give up a hit until a bunt single in the 5th inning, and it only took Summer 92 pitches to get through 8 innings, giving up no runs on 2 hits and 2 walks. The effort earned Tommy the Big Ten Pitcher of the Week honors. The Hoosiers hitters got 10 hits total on the day. Drew Ashley got an RBI single in the 6th, and Hunter Jesse had a solo blast to right field in the 8th. Ashley Barr, Fusey, and Jacob Southern all had 2 hits in the game, leading the team to a 5-2 victory. Saturday had some big attention from the MLB scouts looking to see if righty McCade Brown could pull his elite stuff together in a competitive D1 game. Brown did not disappoint. Brown was perfect in the first three innings, and while we don't have velocity numbers to report, his fastball seemed to get to Jacob Southern's glove pretty quickly. The wicked spin on the curveball produced some downright unfair breaks. Brown threw over 100 pitches in a 7-inning quality start, giving up only 3 hits, 1 earned, striking out 12, and surrendering 0 walks. Brown was honored by the Big Ten Baseball podcast as a big arm. On offense, the Hoosiers got first inning singles from the first 3 batters in the lineup, which led to Drew Ashley scoring on a bases loaded walk from Hunter Jesse. Unfortunately, the Hoosiers left the bases loaded, but a pair of solo shots by Grant Richardson and Morgan Colopy, that was his first collegiate hit, comprised half of Indiana's 4-run total. Matt Litwicki came out of the pen and struck out 2 Scarlet Knights on the way to a 4-out save. Hoosiers won that game 4-2. The weekend concluded with an 8-1 rout of host Minnesota. Paul Tates had Hoosier Nation take notice by getting IU on the scoreboard with a 2-run blast in the 1st inning. He would eventually add a 3rd RBI with a timely ground out in the 5th. Third-year freshman Ty Bothwell got the ball on the bump for his first career start. While not the typical fastball profile at only 5'10 and being a left-hander, Bothwell dominated for 5 innings with a fastball-heavy mix. He located and mixed up his fastball elevations to keep hitters off balance. He peppered in some sliders to righties and a few curveballs to lefties, managing to strike out 10 total, an average of 2 per inning. And Grant Richardson continued his upward momentum on the weekend, leading the Hoosiers with 3 hits on the day. He was joined by Drew Ashley, Cole Barr, and Jordan Fusey, with multi-hit days. Ashley also had a home run in the 7th, and altogether the Hoosier hitters totaled 13 base knocks in the affair.
I was pretty pleased with this weekend. I think anytime you have, obviously an opening weekend, but just, the kind of the weirdness of the year, I thought we did a fine job. Our pitching was absolutely terrific. Our defense was terrific. We caught really, really well. Offensively, we were fine. Some of the things that I saw the last few weeks kind of leading up into the season, some of the things that kind of bled over into the season, but we'll be fine offensively. We grew throughout the weekend, and by the last game, we were kind of more into, I think, what's appropriate for our offense. And we got a chance to get a lot of guys in there and see some different things, and we'll continue to learn and to grow. But overall, I thought it was a good weekend, productive weekend.
So Chris, there was a lot to like in the Hoosiers play this past weekend. What's your highlight?
Well, for me, there's so many choices. You go 3-1 on a four-game weekend, it's going to be a lot, right? And even from the loss, I mean, Madueño's outing, go perfect for four innings was huge too. But for me, I'm going to go with the 17 RBIs that the Hoosier baseball put in, you know, over the weekend. Eight were with two outs, okay? So the two-out RBIs were huge. I tweet about it all the time. To me, it was the difference, right? Because it extends the inning. It adds on to an inning. It adds more pressure to the pitchers. It's more pitches for these guys to throw. I mean, we knew these teams didn't have deep bullpens. The Friday night Rutgers, I don't know how that happened. You know, Friday evening. The minute that starter came out, I figured we were gold. But, all right, it didn't happen. But we had enough two-out RBIs throughout the weekend. And it really was nice to see it from Fucci, who had a rough start last year, you know, at LSU. He had a two-out RBI double, a two-out RBI homer, a two-out RBI single. You had Tates that you mentioned. The home run was with two outs. Hunter Jesse, a walk with two outs. I'll take it. A walk is good. Sam Merson, a triple with two outs. All driving in runs. We even had Barr extending that bat and end up with a hit-by-pitch. And then the pass ball, we get another run. So we really extended innings. We really put pressure on these pitchers. I mean, this Big Ten, we know the pitching isn't that deep. Extend innings. Get those two-out RBIs. And to me, that's my Hoosier highlight. Almost half the runs of the weekend with two outs, you know, in your program. Now, let's see. For some more Hoosier highlights, we're going to kick it over to Carl.
Thank you, Chris. For me, I'm just going to talk about Matt Litwicki. Did a fantastic job and is, you know, making a case for himself to be this team's closer. Brought in on Saturday for a four-out save while in a jam. You know, managed to get out of that jam and then a shutdown inning. And although he wasn't needed for a close on Sunday, you know, coach made the decision that he wanted to see if he was able to come back the next night and have another inning. And he came in, took care of business. He was looking fantastic. And that's, you know, a big piece of it is to have a guy who can close the door at the end. So I'm going to go with Matt Litwicki.
He looks the part too, Carl. The mohawk, the glasses. I mean, he looks the part. Plenty of major league gifts ready for when he comes in the close.
Cass, what do you got for us?
Well, on my end, I'm gonna stick with the pitching side, and I'm going to go with the recovery of a couple of pretty inexperienced pitchers after they got into their first trouble. McCade got into his first trouble in the fourth inning. And after that, he struck out six in a row to end the fourth into the start of the sixth. That's the kind of response I want to see from any pitcher, let alone a guy who had only gone 6 2/3 coming into the game. And then the very next game, Ty gets into trouble in the third inning where he gave up a solo shot home run and actually left the bases loaded. Outside of that third inning, the most pitches he had in an inning was 15. And that was an inning where he actually struck out the side. So strikeouts take more pitches. So I loved seeing that kind of recovery from two fairly inexperienced newer pitchers. So Josh, what about you? What was your highlight?
Yeah, there were a lot of things on the field. That throw from Colopy was outstanding. Like you were talking about the new guys, the pitching, you know, that we didn't know what we were going to see, that some of the bats that we didn't know what we were going to get, you know. But for me, I think my highlight was that baseball is back. I mean, it was so much fun to sit on the couch with the kids and wife and watch games. And what seems like it's been forever since we could do that. And that, so, you know, to be honest, that's definitely my highlight for this week. So now, Chris, it's time for you to give out some hardware.
Baseball is back, and the red belts are back, bro. So you get both. It's like a double win, right?
Love
for those who don't know what we do, if this is the first season you're listening, we give out three awards at the end of the year, all right? A Defensive Player of the Year award, an Offensive Player of the Year award, and where am I listening? And a Pitcher of the Year award. The pitching award is named after Joey Donato. For those of you who don't know why, probably shouldn't be watching the show. No. Best pitch we've ever had in Indiana baseball. The defensive award goes to the named after Tony Butler, won a gold glove at IU. Solid, clutch defensive player. And the offensive award goes to namesake is Alex Dickerson. A lot of you guys know him. And it was named before him, before his big push there a year and a half ago. So it's been the Alex Dickerson Award for a while. We give out red belts every week. We total up the red belts at the end of the year for the award winner. Some previous award winners of the Donato Award, Paulie Milto. A previous award winner of the Butler Award, Logan Kalaita. And let's see, who else? Let's see, Logan Sowers, I believe, won an Alex Dickerson Award. There's been a few. But for this week one, okay, this was difficult. All three were hard. Well, the defensive one's hard because all I did was do the radio play-by-play. So it's a lot harder without seeing it, at least on TV or being at the games. But going by, you know, talking to some people and the way Austin Randa described the play, and he also made another great play in the outfield. Morgan Colopy is going to win the defensive red belt. Again, for the hose job that Josh talked about when the guy tried to stretch the single into the double. But also the inning before, I did get to catch a little video clip of, he left his feet, he slid, he had to get the ball off the edge of the grass or turf or whatever, another nice catch. So he gets the Tony Butler red belt for the week. Now for the Alex Dickerson red belt, another one that was not easy. We really filled up the stat sheet after Friday's first game. But the one who, for me, filled it up the most is going to be Grant Richardson. Okay, he had five hits. He scored four runs. He had three doubles, and those are in every other inning in that one game. He had a long ball. He had five RBIs. He did have four strikeouts, but if you're going to slug 647 for a four-game stretch, I'll take a K again. I'll sign up for that, Grant. You go right ahead. You take your one whiff a game and slug 647 for the four-game set. So Grant gets the red belt for the offensive. Now, for the pitching, I know there's been a little bit of debate or whatever the case. Big Ten gave it to Tommy Sumrall, and then the Big Pod gave it to McCabe Brown. I had mine written down before I heard any of this. McCabe Brown got it for me. Okay? Now, we're talking about, all right, one less inning than Tommy, one more hit than Tommy, but he did give up a run. He had the 12 punch-outs. But McCabe Brown had never left like the first inning of a start. Okay? To me, that's much different. We saw McCabe Brown start a couple games at DeBart, but, you know, if you were online in the first inning getting concessions, you missed him. You know, he got in trouble. You know, he didn't get through the second, or they didn't come back out for the second. McCabe Brown did something that I know I didn't expect. I don't care how many making bacon guys he struck out or whatever he did in that summer league. You know, D1 baseball, Big Ten baseball is different. McCabe Brown, he's on pitching ninja by like the seventh inning. He's doing the McGregor walk off the mound. It was pumped. It was great, man. He pitched a hell of a gem. And if he's going to be the third guy, I think we're going to have a pretty fun season going forward. But those are your three. Okay, you got Grant Richardson, McCabe Brown, and Morgan Colopy for this week. We'll keep a tab going, and we'll see who wins the awards at the end of the season. Now we got the mailbag. The first question is going to go to Carl. We had a lot of these come in different forms and fashions from different people. It's really not a shocker that it came in so many times. But the first question is, any word yet if fans will be allowed at home games at the BART in 2021? Pressure's on Carl to come up with a good answer.
All right. I see. I get the elephant in the room. Thank you. Thank you very much. Someone's going to say I volunteered for this or something, but okay. At this point, the official word from the Big Ten and IU is that fan attendance at games is suspended indefinitely. That phrasing has led to a sliver of hope among fans. The Big Ten learned a hard lesson in the fall about committing too early to a course of action. So they're being cautious. Baseball, however, is not football. We know this. The Big Ten in baseball appears laser focused right now on getting as many of these 44 scheduled games in as possible. Now, I've been reading a lot of the talk on social media. Yes, this is outdoors. Attendance is not huge normally. Many fans have been vaccinated or in the process of being vaccinated. But to look at this from the league perspective, a single misstep and teams aren't playing all their games. And that is their one focus at the time. Now, just this week, IU announced that the Little 500 is going to get pushed back to the end of May. It's going to be on a Wednesday, and they're not going to allow any fans. I don't have any inside knowledge. but you put all these various pieces together. We're not seeing fans at the park. I don't see it. I don't see it, you know, until the Bloomington Regional, the first week of June. You thought I was being pessimistic now, okay? Okay, I am trying to be realistic. Fans at Big Ten regular season games, I'm sorry, I just don't see it. Now, full disclosure, iubase.com is credentialed media, so we will have representatives from our group on site for home games. Now, perhaps that makes it a tad bit easier for me to say what I just said, you know, but the fan experience is what we are all about. And we know this is not the same without the fans. We know this. We don't like it any more than you do. Now, I'll say this, you know, since iubase.com will be at home games, we're going to make this commitment. We're going to promise to take the privilege that we have to make the distance experience that everyone else is going to be experiencing a little bit more rich. You know, we're going to produce some good content on iubase.com. You know, Chris is going to be mad on Twitter, iubase17, you know, and of course, you know, we're going to have this podcast once a week to talk about, you know, what we've seen, you know, the Zoom interactions we've had with Coach and all of those things. We're going to do what we can to bring that to you and make this not be quite as what it is. We're going to do the best we can to make it better. So, all right. Got that past us. The next question is going to go to Cass. Cassidy, McCade Brown might be the Friday night guy soon. Who knows? Or with all these four game weeks, the Sunday guy might be the more important one. What are your thoughts on the importance of which pitcher is in which role during the week?
Okay, thank you, Carl. With this one, I was pulled several different ways. My first instinct was, let's not put the cart before the horse here with McCade or add any extra pressure. Like I said earlier, he came in having thrown just 6 2/3 innings before this weekend, where he threw 7 in his start. And he was absolutely phenomenal this past weekend. Absolutely. But it's usually better to let these things kind of develop over time naturally and not force it. Long term, do I see McCade as a Friday night guy? Absolutely. 100% based on this weekend. If he can keep that going, no doubt in my mind. For the immediate future, unless it's a matchup game, probably not quite yet. Now, as far as the Sunday guy kind of being a more important position in the rotation this year, kind of yes and no. Really the Friday through Sunday, the typical Friday through Sunday guys have a little bit more pressure on them now. Pressure to go those extra innings if they can't try to eke out an extra inning from them, because there is that fourth game on those weekends. You want to keep your bullpen relatively fresh for that fourth game, because if you don't and your starter gets into trouble, you're in trouble. With these games in quick succession, and not knowing, with the doubleheader kind of rotating from Friday to Saturday to Sunday, it really does kind of play with these factors each of these four game weekends. And so in reality, the longer any of your starters can go, the better it's going to be for the full series. That's not really a straightforward answer of if the Sunday guy is more important. I'd say compared to a normal season, yes, absolutely. The Sunday guy is more important this season in these four game weekends than was the case in a normal season. And so that's kind of the way I see it. McCade, yes, eventually a Friday night guy, not quite yet. Sunday guys are also very important this season. So Josh, you get the next one. with Ty seemingly a starting option now based on this weekend, what lefty options out of the pen are you excited about?
Yeah, that's a good question, Cass. Unless I miss somebody, there are only five lefty pitchers on this roster. So if Ty and Tommy are going to be starting two of those, that means you've got three lefty options out of the pen, period. So there's not a whole lot of play with that. And I think we probably envisioned that maybe Braden would be starting and Ty would be coming out of the pen. We'd had that fourth option. But, hey, if Ty keep doing what he's doing, then there's no reason to move him out of that spot, that's for sure. So, yeah, that said, you know, you've got Braden Scott, who pitched twice this last weekend, one and one-third inning, gave up two hits and two runs. Last year, the guy was nails, unhittable. He pitched a team high out of the pen, 14 and two-thirds with 20 strikeouts. I think that was second on the team. So I would assume that coach is going to be trying to ride Braden, help him, hope that he gets back on track. The other two options are two freshmen, Zach Behrman from North Central in Indy, and then Jack Walker, the other freshman from New Palestine. We haven't seen these guys work too much, so it's hard to know what to expect there, and they're young. So hopefully at some point, you know, they'll get out there and get their feet wet and hopefully be able to contribute down the road. But I'm going to guess right now that Braden's going to be – Scott's going to be the guy look to come out when that big lefty bat comes up in a high leverage situation. So Chris, next one's for you. So how hard do you think it is for the players to get pumped up in the atmosphere with not much fans? It's basically just the dugouts yelling at them. They don't get that adrenaline boost from the crowd. How do you think that affects them?
Thanks, Josh. I saw that question was coming to me. I really thought about it more like if it was a normal season, right? And you're coming off a big weekend series, say at Michigan or Ohio State, where there's some fan base, and they're fired up. And then you go play the midweek, and nobody's there. I could see that being a big drop off, right? Totally understand that. But these guys had an entire season taken away from them. I think they're going to be pretty pumped up to play ball regardless. I could see, because it's so quiet, you can hear so much more from the dugouts. I know we noticed that a lot in MLB. You could see more testiness. You could see it getting a more chippy, a little more IU Maryland or what was it, IU San Diego from years past. Who remembers that series? I think there could be a lot more of that. And I'm sure the umpires are going to be on top of that, maybe giving quick warnings and stuff. But you've got all Big Ten playing all Big Ten, teams who know each other, teams who don't like each other too much, with no fans and the dugouts trying to get fired up. I could see that happening more than the guys not being pumped up to play. I could see it adding to some, you know, ill will and whatnot. I noticed, or at least I could hear on the broadcast, they were playing music and videos and stuff at Minnesota for certain teams. So I don't know if the home teams are going to be playing, like, I hope they would at least play the walk-up songs or maybe some rally stuff, because they are true home games for these games, right? I would think they'd be able to do that. So I think they'd still get the music, and I mean, I don't know if you're going to get, you know, what was it, when the three guys are out there on the mound visit or whatever silly stuff
they
play.
Three best friends.
three best friends that anybody could have, right? I don't know if they're going to do all that, and I'll miss that myself. I think that's funny. But I think these guys – I think it's just going to get testy. I think that's what's going to happen. I could see a lot of going back and forth to these teams this year. And, I mean, I'm East Coast. I'm a big hockey fan myself, too. I'm all for it. You know what I'm saying? Let them go at it. But I know these umps are going to be trying to put a stop to it. So it will be a different environment, I would think, for the entire season, considering it's all big and no fans. Now, it's time for a little deep dive into the statistics of the weekend. We do have our stat guru, Cassidy Palmer. Unlike those people up in West Lafayette who are afraid of math, we are not. And we have some of the best in the business to deal with it. Cass, what do you got for us?
Thanks, Chris. I'm going to start by saying we're four games in. There's not a lot of stats, not a lot of data, small numbers, all that fun disclaimer stuff of water, whether good or bad, water will find its level over the course of the season. But with that being said, I did pull out way more numbers than I probably should have. Some things that stood out from the weekend on the pitching side. There were 50 strikeouts in just four games. That's 12 and a half a game. I went back looking at the last 5 years, the average is 8 per game. And the last full season, it was just under 9. And that's the most that the team has had for a full season in the time that I looked. It, again, water level, we'll see how that goes, but that very much impressed me. There were a lot of strikeouts, but not racking up the pitches, the pitch counts too high. So that was really good to see. Also gave up just 15 hits over 4 games, batting average of just 132 against. And actually among the starters, that goes down to 128. If you can have 4 starters in a weekend and they have a collective batting average against of 128, you're doing real well.
And 2 guys who hadn't ever started before.
Yes.
With Taya and McCabe.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is absolutely phenomenal. One thing to watch that raised a little bit of a red flag on my end was that almost half, 7 of the 15 hits, were for extra bases. That's kind of a mixed bag. It means that, like, over the course of the weekend, we saw that nobody was really making super consistent contact against the IU pitchers. But when they got a piece of it, they really got a piece of it. So that's something to watch out for. It will probably come down as we get numbers bigger than 15 for the hits. But just a little bit of a red flag that I saw over the weekend. On the offensive side, batting with runners in scoring position versus Minnesota was actually pretty strong. Not incredible small numbers. Like sometimes you see, oh, they were 600 with runners in scoring position because they had so few at bats in that situation. But in game one, they hit 250, and in game two, they hit 263 with runners in scoring position. You put up definitely anything above the Mendoza line with runners in scoring position, and you're typically going to do pretty well. Also, the batting with 2 outs versus Minnesota was impressive, especially that game one. And this is going to be small numbers again, but hit 400 with 2 outs in game one against Minnesota and 273 in game two. You like see it, like Chris was saying, extend these innings. That is huge at this time. And in that, in the first Minnesota game, IU had 15 at bats with 2 outs. The minimum you're going to see pretty much is 9. Double plays can technically drop below that, but average game, the minimum you'll see is 9. And in that first Minnesota game, there were 15. That is a very good sign when we're trying to work these pitchers more and more. Another thing that intrigued me a little bit was there were 6 home runs, which is not that 95 home run pace thing that we've seen in the past, but it was 6 home runs by 6 different players. I liked seeing the variety of players go deep. That fascinated me a little bit. A little something to watch, kind of along the lines with the extra base hits off the pitchers. Almost a third, about 30% of at-bats with a runner on third and fewer than 2 outs were strikeouts. Those are the times where you want to take advantage. At the very least, put the ball into the outfield. Put the ball in play, and typically good things are going to happen. Hope to see that number come down over the next few series, but that's where it stands after 1 weekend. And those are my stats right now. Again, don't read too much into any of these because water will find its level. So now Carl's going to give us a taste of what happened around the Big Ten this weekend.
Thank you, Cassidy. Yes. Actually, it went pretty straightforward. The Big Ten, every team won at least 1 game. Every team lost at least 1 game. So the top teams are 3-1. The bottom teams are 1-3. Really only one significant surprise, which was Michigan State taking 3 of 4 from Maryland. That was quite a bit of a surprise. D1 baseball had Michigan State as the 11th team in the league and Maryland as the third team. A lot of the pundits that I've listened to have all picked Maryland as that might be the team that surprises and wins the Big Ten. As Cassidy said, this was one weekend. You just don't know. Michigan State may in fact be a lot better than they were being predicted to be. I tend to find that I think probably it's going to be somewhere in the middle for these two teams. I doubt Maryland was quite as bad as it came out. Now, keep in mind, two of these games were really close. But at the same time, part of winning games is closing them out. So, and doing well towards the end of games. When you're looking at the top of the league, Michigan did not dominate. A lot of the pundits are saying that, that the talent level that Michigan has might very well come and dominate the league. They didn't do that this past weekend. Now, I would also, preface that with the thought that except for their two games against UCLA, Michigan actually got off to a very rocky start in 2019 and ended the season in Omaha. So that may be a program that's just going to take longer to get going, I think we're looking at a very challenging and competitive Big Ten season. I don't know if that's good in the way of postseason bids for the league. The only guaranteed way to get a postseason bid at this point is to win the league. So that needs to be IU's focus. In my prediction track, which was based on D1's rankings, Indiana needed to win 3 out of 4 this weekend. That's what Indiana did. So Indiana's done the first stage. The next few weeks are a little daunting based on what I have down as predictions. But I may go back and tweak that based on what we see, because I think a Michigan State team that can do that to Maryland is probably a little bit better than they were rated. We'll see how they do as the competition changes over the next course of this next month. All right. Speaking of the next weekend, Josh, what are we going to be seeing when Penn State comes to town?
Yeah, thanks, Carl. Like you said, Penn State's coming to Bloomington for a 4-game set. They split 2-2 at home against Northwestern this last weekend. Friday night is a 1 p.m. start. Their big Friday night ace, Bailey Dees, is 6'8", 250. That's a big boy. He had a 1.88 ERA last season, and he did end up getting the W last week in his start. And then Saturday, we've got a doubleheader starting at noon, and then wrap it up Sunday at 1 in the afternoon. Offensively, Josh Spiegel, he had an absolute monster weekend with a slash line of 533, 563, and 1,333. So he absolutely tore it up last weekend. 3 home runs, 8 hits. So that'll be a guy to watch, the guy that we might try to neutralize to have some success this weekend. As Carl mentioned earlier, we know at least for this weekend, but probably for the season, there will be no fans at the games. But luckily, the games are broadcast on Big Ten Plus, and you guys can do what most of us do, and you can sync up Austin Render on the IU radio network. He's the new play-by-play guy, and he did a fabulous job last weekend. So, you start your video feed, hit pause, get the radio going, sync up the pitches. So that was kind of nice to do. So that's an option for fans to keep track of the team this weekend. So that's going to do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana Baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CUatTheBart and at iubase17. On Instagram, we're iubase. And subscribe to the Talking Hoosier Baseball channel on YouTube, featuring these video podcasts summer league clips, game day media availabilities, and much more. So for Carl James, Chris Feeney, and Cassidy Palmer, I'm Josh Bennett, and while it may still be a while for us fans, we look forward to the day that we can see you back at the bar.